I'm your host, Michael Callahan, and wherever you might be now, this is Where We Go Next. Andre Smith is the founder and CEO of Relationship Restored, a podcast network that delves into all things related to establishing and maintaining healthy romantic relationships. He's also the executive podcast producer and head of podcasting at Urban One, and the co-founder of All About It social media and branding. Dre, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It took us a while to set everything up, but I'm glad that we finally got to be on.
Yes, I feel the exact same way. For our listeners, Dre and I met at a podcasting convention outside of Denver, Colorado in late August. One of the things that I love about going to events like that is, almost without exception, I'll always meet at least one person there who I kind of hit it off with right away. No matter where in the country they're from or what our particular backgrounds are, you just feel a connection with someone where like the conversation just feels really easy. Not to be too presumptuous here, Dre, but it kind of feels like I've known this person much longer than like the 10 minutes I've been talking with them. And especially at a convention where you're meeting like, I don't know, dozens of people a day, and it can sometimes feel a little disorienting. And which meeting am I going to? And all right, am I confident enough to pitch myself? And do I know what the hell I'm talking about? Just coming across someone who not only could be like a good business connection potentially in the podcasting space, but also just someone who you get along with really well. The conversation is natural, kind of takes the weight off the rest of the convention.
No, I definitely agree. And I feel the same way about you. It's always funny going to those things, especially when you go to the very first one. People already have kind of like their cliques and their crew. And if you're the first timers there, you're just trying to figure it out and meet some people who you feel like are cool too. And luckily, we were able to meet and really hit it off. You definitely helped make that a great experience for me for sure.
Oh, thanks, man. I feel the same way. I've been to other conferences for work, usually things that have to do with video games, because I'm in video game advertising. And those are fun. You get to play video games that haven't been released yet, and you get to see some cool behind the scenes stuff. But a lot of the people in those conferences, even if there are a lot of really nice people, it's a bit of a bifurcation between the people who are there as fans or the people who are there as indie developers, let's say. And then these big corporations that are multi-million or multi-billion dollar enterprises, again, could be staffed with perfectly wonderful people, but it's just a totally different vibe from the DIY nature of a lot of podcasting. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would have to guess that, I don't know, 90 plus 95% of all podcasts ever made were made by people who just had an idea and set something up in their closet or their office and just started talking.
Yeah, because it's a labor of love. It's not something that you start out the gate making a whole bunch of money if you do make any money at all, unless you have a big name behind you. But if you're the regular guy like most of us are when you first get started, you have to put up your own money for your own equipment and invest in yourself before you could really see any type of return.
And speaking of labor of love, a question I really enjoy asking founders is why they started their companies. And you've started a few. But I'd specifically love to dig into the inciting incident behind the launch of Relationship Restored, which began, at least by my records, around April of 2022. So what was the motivation behind starting not just a single podcast about love and relationships, but a three-show network?
I guess it's kind of like when they say, like, when Jesus performed miracles, that once you have the miracle performed, then you want to go out and tell everybody about what happened and how great it is. That's kind of how I felt when I got married and got into a relationship with my wife. When I was initially dating growing up, I had a great foundation. So my parents were marriage counselors. My mom and dad, biological father, were divorced ever since I could remember. However, my mom got remarried to my stepdad, and I got to see what a healthy relationship looked like in my house. I got to see my stepdad lead in a home as a man, even when he lost his job for 3 years, which was very interesting and very unique and something I had never seen before. And growing up, I learned a lot from that situation. And then when I moved into my college relationship with my first real girlfriend, I completely botched that relationship. She was a great girl, wonderful girl. I was in college playing football, and I thought I was ready for that relationship, but I honestly was not. And for the longest, I thought that she was the issue until I sat down with my stepdad and told her all these things that was wrong with her. She can't cook. She can't do this. She can't do that. And then he came back and gave me the truth and was like, none of that matters. Who cares if she can't cook? Who cares if she does this? And who cares if she does that? And when he opened my eyes in that moment, I had so much guilt. And I was like, man, I was wrong. And it really hit me and really hurt me to the core that I was telling this girl all these things at the age of 19 and 20. I didn't know what I was talking about, but I felt so bad and so guilty that I was telling her all these things that maybe she was taking as true that just weren't true. So when I realized that and started to learn more about relationships, it opened my eyes and made me want to share with other people. And then when I met my wife, we went through our own journeys. And as I got deeper into that relationship and it became more long term, because that was the longest term relationship I had been in to that point, I just began to learn so much. And then we moved in together and I learned so much. And the whole time we were waiting for marriage as well, so not having sex during marriage. And I learned so much. So every time I would learn something, I would just want to share it. Basically, the things that I learned would align with the foundation that my parents had built with me through my relationship with God, but also with the foundation that they gave me being marriage counselors. So every time I learned something, I just wanted to share it. So that was really the idea behind what I'm doing with Relationship Restored. Back in 2019, I had the idea of wanting to have a relationship brand and a relationship media company, but I just didn't know what it would look like, how it would be presented, how it would be put out. But in 2021, I picked up a podcast client called Breakbeat Media, and I helped launch one of their top podcasts as being one of the top podcasts in the country in its category, and won Spotify's Best New Podcast of 2021. And I was like, hey, I think I got a knack for podcasting. Why don't I take my love for podcasting and my love for relationships and bring those together? And that's how Relationship Restored was formed.
One thing that you said there that I think really embodies the ethos of your show is your vulnerability right out of the gate. In social media and on YouTube, pretty much anywhere where people can present themselves, there's real incentive. And I've talked with other guests on this show about the kind of toxicity of social media and how it can lead us to perform versions of ourselves that aren't authentic, and then how that inauthenticity breeds more inauthenticity among other people. If all you're seeing is someone posting on Instagram all their amazing memories and the rooftop parties and just all the good things going on in their life without ever sharing any of the bad stuff that all of us go through, then you're going to get a distorted view of what their life is. And if you're comparing the 24 hours in your day to the 5 minutes of their day that they're posting and sharing with you, you're always going to feel like a failure compared to the people you're viewing on Instagram. And one of the things that I really like about your podcasts and your answer just now, which embodies it, is you're not afraid to talk about your own faults and the ways in which you are wrong or will still be wrong, or the imperfections in your relationships or the imperfections in yourself. And I think that's really refreshing, because I think that there are so many incentives that are going the other way. There are so many incentives for all of us to just present this perfect image of ourselves that is false, right? My dad has this saying that he busts out every now and again. There's no such thing as a perfect family. And if they look like a perfect family from the outside, there's something probably really wrong they're not showing you.
No, that's real. What you're explaining, that's the only way we learn, is by people sharing what has actually happened in their lives. The reason that we do share, especially on a platform like mine's, is so that people don't make the same mistakes, or that they can see certain things coming. That's essentially what books are, right? It's just people talking about the things that they've learned and sharing their experiences and how they overcame them. But I always say the man that wrote the book didn't have the book, that somebody had to go through an experience and learn. And then they took their experiences and they built on all the experiences that they had of the people before them and add their own nuances in, and then share with the world their version of what happened and how they overcame it. And hopefully we can get to a point to where we have a generation of people that start to avoid a lot of different things based off of the information that other people share. So that's what I'm just trying to do, is really just be vulnerable and say, like, hey, we all go through these problems in relationships. And that's the biggest thing too, right? Is that a lot of relationships fail because we don't have a healthy expectation of what a true relationship is or what a healthy relationship is. We have to learn healthy relationships have arguments. Healthy relationships have disagreements. But in our mind, especially with society and how we see the Cinderellas and all the movies, that if you're in a healthy relationship, it seems that there shouldn't be arguments. There should be constant agreement, that there shouldn't be any friction. And that's just not the truth. So I hope to put the story out there to say that my wife and I have a very happy and healthy relationship. However, it's not perfection. And that's part of having a healthy relationship. two people coming together that are completely different, it takes time to come together and to be on one accord. So if I can share those ups and downs and give people perspective, then I want to do that, because that also gives you credibility too. If you just say I'm perfect all the time, I think that you lose credibility. But if you can share your true experiences, then I think that gives you credibility that I'm not just telling you all the fluffy, nice things. I'm giving you what's really going on.
Yes, I think people are really hungry for vulnerability and authenticity. And to your point about how what the media portrays relationships and marriage to be like, how many Disney movies, how many romantic comedies, how many movies about love, the final scene is the couple getting married. As if once they reach that, once they get married, it's happily ever after. The problem is solved, because that's how films are structured. One of the best things I learned in film school is that you start off with a character who thinks life is great, and then they encounter a problem, and then they struggle through that problem. And then hopefully the end of the third act, at least if it's an uplifting movie, their problem is solved and life goes on. But the way that romantic comedies or romantic movies are structured in that exact same way creates this false impression, especially among young people watching these movies, that if you can just get to marriage, if you just make it there, you're done. The end of the movie has been reached. Time to roll the credits. You and your wife, Brianna, who goes by Brie, one of the things that you've talked about in one of your episodes was once you're married, and I relate to this now, my wife and I, Ann, got married on October 29th, and nothing really feels different. We still have to resolve conflicts amicably. We still have to work through our days together. We still have to put each other first, and we still have to find ways to compromise that we can live together as two individuals who are looking to form a complete, healthy union. But we were doing that before we got married. Now we're doing it after. We just happen to have some cool jewelry on our fingers now. But I think that there's this really toxic and unhealthy narrative in society that says like marriage is a finish line rather than just another step along the way.
Yeah, it's just not true. You hit the nail on the head. The main word is work. It's work. And it's not bad work. It can be challenging at times. I know some people are like, oh, marriage is hard, or once you get married, it gets harder. No, it's just challenging as you continue to grow. You have new experiences. So even my wife and I, we have a great relationship, but we haven't had a child yet. We haven't bought our first house yet. We haven't done a lot of things yet that a lot of married couples have done. So it's work that we're continuing to do within our relationship to try to grow and to be better for each other. And the thing that we just have to keep in mind is just to keep each other first. I think that a lot of relationships fail because there's a lot of selfishness. It's just thinking about yourself. But if you're thinking about that other person and they're thinking about you first and foremost, and I think that's definitely a formula for a really great, long-lasting relationship.
Yes. So, I mean, it goes back to what your stepdad told you about, how it's like, if all you're focusing on is how the person you're dating or the person you're with isn't this thing or doesn't do this for me, or, oh, they're lacking in this way or this other way, you're really just looking at that person as, what are they giving me? What are they adding to my life? Which, of course, is part of it. You want to be with someone who's adding positivity and adding value to your life, but also it's an organic thing. You want to be adding stuff to their life as well. And you don't just want to see them as like a product you buy off Amazon. And I'm going to leave a 5-star review if this product fulfills all of the needs that I was hoping when I bought it. But I think that transactional nature of those relationships, I think, is really prominent. And also, just a random aside here, Dre, my mom and dad were marriage counselors in their church for many years for newlywed couples. So I think that's a fun coincidence.
Oh, that is a coincidence. I love that. Yeah, my parents, they really provided the opportunity for me to, like I said, really see a healthy relationship, but gave me the opportunity to really just gain wisdom from them. They allowed me to just sit there and talk with them a lot of times when I was younger. I know some parents, they have the mindset of do what I say. You can't talk back. I don't want you to explain yourself. But sometimes my mom will let me sit there and just talk and express my feelings and let me be heard. That played a huge part in the person that I am today and the empathy that I have for people, my ability to be able to listen when people are talking and actually hearing what they're saying. So I really appreciate my parents for that background. They were always able to give me great insight. I think also with them being marriage counselors, but them also going through marriage counseling themselves, they learned what things do work, what things don't work, what things they would suggest, what things they wouldn't. And I attribute my foundation and a lot of my relationship knowledge and just the way that I think and problem solve to them.
What you just mentioned about your mom reminds me of an episode of Real Love Scenario. You were talking with your co-host, Rhonda McClendon, it stuck with me because it reminded me a lot of what I was like as a kid. You said that when you were a kid, your mom always let you express your point of view. Your mom would tell you to do something and you would always plead your case with her. And I was all like that growing up, to the point where my parents were convinced I would be a lawyer when I grew up because I would always try and hit every angle. Like I was in court. My mom or dad were like the judges, you know, and if I could just plead my case just enough, if they could just understand my point of view, Your Honor, that they would let me have my way. One day you were talking with your stepdad and he pointed out that though your mom let you express your opinion or disagreement with her, she never changed her mind. And that had a big impact on you, feeling like you could be heard even if you didn't always get your way.
It was because he came from a different school of thought and a different way of being raised by the switch or the belt, to where kids don't get an opinion and they don't get a say. So it used to eat him up when he used to see me in there with my mom just explaining myself and talking, and she's just listening. But then he said that he even started to notice that she never changed her mind. But not only did she never change her mind, I always did what she ultimately said to do. So it then opened his eyes to, oh, wow, she allowed him to express himself. But I'm sitting here beating my kids over the head, trying to get them to do something, and they never listen, not giving them any room to say anything or express themselves. And they're not listening. But she's given this kid the ability to explain himself. But then he always listens to what she says after. That's a powerful thing, right? And learning relationships and people. And sometimes, which I had to learn in my marriage, sometimes people just want to be heard.
We only know what we've experienced. Like, we only know what we know. A kind of tangential example would be, I have friends who've been investing their money since they were teenagers or early 20s, you know, so the point where they hit 30 and they've got money in stocks and bonds and CDs and retirement funds and 401ks. You know, my parents are many wonderful things and they've raised me with a morality. And though I'm agnostic now, a Christian upbringing and a theory of right and wrong, and they showed me what a healthy marriage looked like and so many other things. They enabled me creatively. I could go on and on. But one thing, and I think it's just because I don't think they learned much about it growing up, is I was never exposed to investing or financial advice or anything along those lines. And I think similarly, if all you know is one way to raise a kid, even if that way of raising the kid with a switch, to your earlier point, and corporal punishment, I think in our parents' generation and earlier was just like a way of life. My dad had similar stories where it's pick the size of the stick that I'm going to beat you with. We hear that now and it's like horrendous, but that's how the majority of kids were raised. You speak back, you break the rules, you do something I didn't ask you to do or didn't tell you to do, and it's violence. Whether or not it's even effective, that's just going to be what you think needs to be done. And I think that applies to so many different aspects of our relationships with each other. You have this video from 5 years ago where you were proposing to Bree, and it looked like a hell of a party. And you said to her, quote, "All my life, I thought marriage was this amazing thing. Just to think that there's this one person out of all the people in the world that you would want to spend the rest of your life with. I always thought this person must be amazing. I can't wait to meet this person. I started to build up these expectations of what this person would look like, how they would be. I would say a lot of times I was looking for a lot of the wrong things in all the wrong places. And it's funny how sometimes God would give you exactly what you're asking for just to show you it's not what you need." End quote. And I think similarly, we just know what we know, or we know what we think we know. I'd love for you to say more about what you said to Bree, who's now your wife, that day.
That's just amazing that you recited that back to me, because as you were saying that, my mind went to different pockets of my life to where that statement applied. And that was really cool, because the beginning of that, just saying like all my life, I thought marriage was this amazing thing, takes me back to when I was younger. And I always thought, some people have the viewpoint of wanting to mess with a whole bunch of women. My thought was that, man, if you found one with all these beautiful women in the world that you saying, I want to spend the rest of my life with, this must be an amazing thing. But then when you get to that next part of what I had told her, that took me to my college relationship. And I ended up being with the girl that I was with, and she was great. And I kind of explained the situation already, that I just wasn't ready. But in the midst of me not feeling like she was the one for me, I went and sought out all the things that she didn't do. After that, I went and saw a girl who was very sexual. I went to seek out a girl who did my laundry and cooked. And then I realized at that moment, after being with those people, that, yeah, these things don't really matter as much as I thought they did. So it's just cool, like, just hearing that, because it really took me back to certain moments in my life to where I learned those lessons and realized, oh, that doesn't matter as much. oh, these are skills that you can learn. This is not something that's a character trait, which is more important. And when I got to the point of being with my wife, I think I had an understanding of what relationships really are and what it really takes. And I was at a point to where I did not put that unrealistic expectation on her like I had did my past girlfriend. Because you can imagine, like I said in the video, if you had this expectation of what you thought marriage would be, God bless the first person that you thought would be your wife, because the expectations that you probably have for her are insane. If you had this dream since you were a child, it's probably so unrealistic. And if they fall short, you just think they're the worst person in the world, which is like, oh no, you're only 19 and you don't really know what people go through in life or how relationships are truly formed, but we have to learn. And I like what you had said earlier too about sometimes we only know what we know and that's it. Sometimes we're doing the best we can with what we know. And I always say that you have to get other people's perspective in order to see the full picture. And that's why I love doing my show. That's why I love having people write in. That's why I love going to events and talking to people about relationships, because I want to hear other people's perspective. It's kind of like if you have this circle and you have a picture in that circle, and then over top of that circle, you put another circle, but then you take one slice out. That one slice is your perspective. And you can't see the entire picture from just your one slice being removed. You have to then go and talk to other people and see what does it look like from that side? And then what does it look like from that side? Even if you may not agree with some of the things that they say, at least you're getting a different perspective on a situation. So when I talk now about relationships, I can say, hey, I've interviewed 50 people about cheating, or I talked to 200 people about communication in a relationship. So I've heard so many different ways that people have approached it and ways that people have seen it and how people feel like certain things apply to them in ways that they don't. It's allowed me to get a better picture of whatever that subject is or whatever we're talking about. And I just love that you brought that up, because I think that's such a big thing and why we should seek other people's, not necessarily opinions, but just perspectives. Just hear what they have to say about certain things. Because even if you don't agree, it paints a picture for you of a particular subject or conversation.
100%. I have this analogy that I use over and over again to any longtime listeners out there. You can fast forward like 30 seconds. But the analogy is, let's imagine you had two people in, let's say, Northern Virginia, where you're located. And you had someone saying, like, all right, between the two of you, I want you both to race around the world. And the first one of you who's back here is going to get $1 million. And between those two people in this hypothetical fictional scenario, only one of them knows that planes exist. Both of them can be trying to get around the world as fast as humanly possible. But if one person is using planes and the other person is using trains and ships and automobiles, that person who doesn't know about planes will never get there in time. If we don't know about these things, we'll never get it right. The idea of looking at the podcast as an opportunity to learn from other people's experiences is a really healthy one. And I also love something you said about how we confuse things we can learn with character traits. It's an interesting intersection, right? Sometimes things that we learn eventually do become part of who we are. Like if you learn how to mountain climb and then you mountain climb every single weekend for a decade, you can call yourself a mountain climber. But it also doesn't mean that no one else can ever learn. That's a great bit of wisdom there, that I think the things that we look in other people or the ways that we view ourselves, we confuse who they are with what they have learned to do and underestimate our own ability to learn those same things. Rather than be like, I have to be with a woman or a man who cooks, you could also just say, I want to be with a version of me who cooks. And it's such a, in my opinion, healthier perspective.
I mean, that's such a great point. First, I love that analogy. That's awesome. I might use that. Love that. I think another question you have to ask yourself with that is, why do you even want somebody to learn that? Or why do you want that to be a part of who they are? Because that's something I had to question myself. And sometimes when you look back, you're only doing things because that's what your parents told you to do, or that's what you were taught to do. But if you actually ask the question to yourself, do you really care about these things? Sometimes you don't. And I think there's a good story. I heard a story once of a man, basically he was going to put a ham in the oven and his wife was like, oh no, you can't put a ham in the oven whole. You need to cut it first. He was like, why you need to cut it? I've never heard of that before. She was like, that's what you have to do. And then he was like, where'd you learn that? She was like, my mom. And then he called her mom and said, so, yeah, my wife said you have to cut a ham before it goes into the oven, trying to figure out where she got that from. And she was like, that's just what you do. I learned it from my mom. And then he called the grandma. Luckily, she was around. And he asked, why do you cut the ham in half before putting it in the oven? And she said, oh, back in those times, the ovens weren't big enough to fit the whole ham. So we just cut it in half. But it just shows how, like, over time, you just learn things and learn things. And you don't even know why you're doing it. It was just something that your parents did or somebody told you to do. And that's just how you did it in your home. But sometimes when you meet somebody new, they question that and they say, why do you do that? And sometimes it's healthy because you'll realize, I don't even know why I do this. Or, yeah, I don't really care to do this after thinking about it. And now that I'm an adult, it was just something I was conditioned to do. So that's one thing I had to do is learn. There are certain things that I would like my wife to do that she can learn. That's not necessarily a character trait. But then there's other things that I'm thinking that she should do. But when I really think about it, I don't really care if she does that or not. So I had to come to that realization and kind of differentiate between the two.
That story about the ham, it reminds me of this philosophical concept called Chesterton's fence, named after G.K. Chesterton. Imagine there's a fence in the middle of a field. You've just arrived there. Basically breaks down that there are two types of people. There are people who, when they approach that fence for the very first time, they see it, they look around, everything looks safe, nothing looks dangerous. There's no indication of why the fence would be there. So just tear it down. There's another group of people who, when they see the fence for the first time, they look around. They don't see any indication anything is unsafe or anything's dangerous. They're not sure why it's there. But before they make the decision to remove the fence, they want to make sure they know all the details as to why the fence was initially constructed. And this kind of seems like a reverse of that, because Chesterton's fence is about don't tear something down or change something until you know why it was implemented in the first place. But I guess if we want to call it Chesterton's ham, don't continue to do something until you know why it was initiated in the first place, because you might figure out you're slicing a ham for an oven that's already way too large.
For sure. And that makes me think of something that I have been talking to my wife about recently. We had just watched Tyler Perry's documentary, Maxine's Baby, I believe it's called. And after that, for whatever reason, because my wife loves serial killer documentaries and stuff like that, we watch a documentary called Crazy Not Insane. And basically that documentary was talking about we all get mad, we all get angry, but why do some people choose to kill and others don't? And what was so eye-opening to me, and the reason why I'm putting this together with the Tyler Perry documentary, is that so many people go through things when they're kids. And it really, for a lot of us, dictates a lot of what happens in our lives and the way that we look at life and who we grow up to be. And expounding on a conversation that we're having and talking about right now about the fence and the ham, there's so many things that we learn when we're younger, right? And that we just don't know where it came from, why it was there, but it takes some work to unlearn some things. And there is nothing that will get you to look at yourself and your flaws and all the things that you've endured when you grew up, like being in a relationship with somebody else. That will force you to look at every part of you, especially if you love them and they love you, because that's when a lot of those things start to show up. When you're living by yourself or with somebody that you don't truly love or see a future with, that's one thing. But when you're with somebody you love and you have to learn to live with them, you have to figure out how you're going to raise your kids. All those things start to come up and you truly have to face them in those moments.
Back to the Relationship Restored Network, two of the three podcasts, Worth the Wait and For the Girls, are focused around, I think, marriage specifically, you could say, although relationship advice, but a lot of it revolves around marriage. And Worth the Wait is specifically about how you and Bree decided to wait until marriage to have sex. Part of starting any creative endeavor is a desire to share your own story, right? You've got to get something off your chest, something you think society would want to experience with you. In many ways, I think any creative act is inherently selfish because it's what's on your mind. It's what's on your heart. You've got something that you need to share that you have to get out because you think it's worth sharing. But successful creative endeavors are also, in part, business decisions. You have to consider if there's an audience out there for what you're producing. If you make something and no one looks at it, was it worth it? And you and I are both in the marketing and advertising space. And there's something that we hear over and over, and that's audience avatar. So for our listeners, an audience avatar, think of it like a fictional character who represents the ideal person you're trying to reach, like an amalgamation of the demographics of your proposed audience. Could be like a college educated suburban mom or gamer guy between the ages of 18 and 25, or a first generation American who is fluent in Spanish. When you started Relationship Restored, who were you imagining as your audience avatar, and how do you see them as connected to your own personal story?
That's a great question. I think, to be honest, it was initially, especially from my experience running a social media branding company, so essentially a marketing agency, Black millennial women was the initial focus. And that was for a few different reasons. Black and millennial, because I feel like that's who I am. And I think when it comes to things like this, different content, people tend to follow the people that they feel like they can relate to and the stories that they feel like they can relate to. So I felt like targeting that group would be something that will help the content go a lot further. And then also seeing a lot of things in the areas that I grew up in the places that I grew up in, seeing that some people in our community needed some help and some guidance on how to operate in relationships. And I think that's for anybody. That's why people go back and give to the school that they graduated from. That's why people give back to their hometown. You have a connection to the communities that you grew up in and wanting to influence those for the better. And when it came to women, I just noticed that a lot of times men don't like to get advice. And then when they do get advice, they want it straight to the point. And I'm part of that group. If I want to learn how to do something, I'll turn on YouTube. If I'm trying to figure out how to mount a TV or to mount a shelf, I don't need a 20-minute video.
Yes.
I'll go for the 2-minute one.
Yeah, yeah.
Get rid of all the fluff. Just get straight to what I need to do to fix the problem, to where women, they tend to be more okay with having a little bit more of a lengthier conversation and more context building up to the ultimate solution, having a little entertainment and a little fun. So that was the initial target audience that we built it out for. But honestly, it was really just telling the story and seeing who would connect with it. And I think that that's a difference too, when I add in my faith, which is a big part of my journey, is really just what I feel like the purpose of my life is and what God has ultimately for my life. And it was big for me when I learned what the difference between purpose and positioning was. And I was like, okay, now I know what I need to do with my life. And the difference for those who don't know is that your purpose isn't tied to your positioning. And the way that I normally explain it is that you could look at a chair, and the purpose of a chair is to hold someone up while they sit. But it doesn't matter where that chair is positioned, whether it's positioned in a courtroom or a restaurant, whether it's in Houston, Atlanta, Vegas, no matter where that chair is positioned, it can still fulfill its purpose. So for me, I was always focused on, all right, what purpose does God have for my life? And I feel like the relationship stuff was it. So although I had this idea, what's that one quote, man plan, God laughs, or something like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That you have this plan for what you think things may be. And I definitely tried to be strategic in what I was doing. But ultimately, I was just like, you know, I'm going to put together a plan and just put it out there and see who connects. And honestly, the audience that I was initially trying to get when I first launched is pretty much the audience that we have now. I'm glad to see that we do have more men that are a part of it, and people of all different ethnicities and race are connecting with the content, which I love to see, because everybody struggles with relationships. Everybody deals with relationships. So I'm glad that it connects with so many people. It's just been a blessing just to see, like, you have an idea, you put something out there, but then it actually resonates with the people that you were creating the content for.
There's a theme emerging in this conversation that I can see, and it seems to be the intersection between the stories we're told, or the ways that we see people in our lives behave, which are really just stories. Behavior is a kind of story. How we see people act is a story. A story, in my view, is not just the words that we speak, but the ways that we live our lives. And especially as children, we see those stories and we internalize them, and then we often live them. You said on a recent episode of Worthy Weight, quote, "There's a lack of seeing Black marriage being healthy and happy, so it's important to have these conversations," end quote. There's this stat out of Pew Research that says the Black marriage rate is at an all-time low. It's like at 32% compared to, I think it's 56% for white marriages. There's this book by Ralph Richard Banks. He's a professor at Stanford Law School. He focuses on race inequality in the law. And he wrote a book that delves into this topic called Is Marriage for White People? How the African-American Marriage Decline Affects Everyone. I highly recommend it. Professor Banks is Black himself, and so it's a personal topic for him. But I wonder, to your point, Dre, when you sought to create this show for a specific audience, Black millennial women, or just like a Black audience in general, was part of that trying to share and create the stories that you felt were absent? In the same way that, like, I didn't know the first thing about investing because I just never got exposed to it. Is some of the starting the channel just like exposing people to stories and ways of being and ways of having relationships that can change how we think about those things?
I would say that's one of the number one reasons why I did it. You go out and I talk to so many people that never have seen a healthy relationship, never seen a healthy, happy marriage. And I'm like, what? It exists. It's possible. I saw it in my home. Like, you can have two people who love each other that don't argue in front of their kids, that don't curse each other out in front of their kids, that there's not infidelity, and be happy. But a lot of people don't think that that exists, or their view of what marriage or relationships is so skewed. My wife was one of those people. She just thought, hey, men cheat, you take them back, people argue. And I saw that specifically in my community. And I was like, we need to see more healthy marriages and not just the old ball and chain. Been together 40 years. That's the old ball and chain. That's the old lady. Yep, she drive me crazy, but we still here. Like, nothing like that. We want something that makes marriage seem exciting and something to want to strive towards. Even a mutual friend of ours or associate of ours, Cody, who started Black Love. When I talked to her, interviewed her, she said that was the reason that she started Black Love and started interviewing Black couples, because there were so many people that she came across that said, I don't know any healthy, happy Black marriages. And it's a thing. And representation is a thing. And seeing something is a thing. I remember, even growing up, for me, I was able to know that college was in my future and was something that I could do because I knew other people that went to college, even though I was first generation in my family. But I know some people, when I would go to schools and mentor, they didn't even know it was possible. They don't even think of it as a possibility because they never seen anyone do it, or seen anyone like themselves do it, or anyone from where they're from do it. So I think when you have that representation and it's out on Front Street and on Broad Street and widely spread out on social media and in the world of YouTube and on the internet, I think that that gives people something to strive towards. And I think that that's all we can really do, because you won't be in everyone's home to counsel them or give them advice on every single situation. But one of the biggest things that we know when it comes to religion, I know it was Obama's campaign slogan, is hope. A lot of people just want hope that something is possible, that there is a better side to things, that marriage being happy and healthy is a possibility. And if you're able to provide that hope to say, oh, I seen somebody who looks like me who was able to do it, and they didn't have the best upbringing, or they went through some struggles, but they were still able to push through it, I think I can do that too. And if we can provide somebody with that glimmer of hope, then I feel like we're doing our job.
Yeah, there's a lot of power in seeing a narrative that's different from the one that you grew up with. It could be marriage, but it could be anything. It could be friendship, a job, anything in your life. If all you've seen is it presented one way, you start thinking about it in a way that is not rational and actually forecloses what could be a really good thing in your life.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate, man. I see so many people deal with this, and that was a struggle with me and my wife as well. That luckily I had the foundation from my parents that allowed me to have a healthy expectation when it comes to marriage and relationships. But my wife was completely opposite. Her dad was not in her life. Her mom had different relationships that she was in growing up, but nobody who was there as a constant. And the things that she saw, her vision of what a healthy relationship was something different than especially what my experience was. And that's one thing too, I will say, because my wife wanted to get married. But one thing that I've learned with giving people relationship advice and doing this whole relationship thing is just defining what certain things mean to people before we start to have a conversation or start to talk. So you say you want marriage. I ask, what does marriage mean to you? You say that you want to fall in love. I ask, what is love to you? You say you want to date. What's dating to you? Because you start to learn that people have these different views and definitions of what these things are, because you'll start having a conversation with them about marriage And you're talking about two completely different things, but you don't know that yet. Because from their experience and your experience, the way you view marriage, the commitment, what it truly is and what it takes to be successful are two different things. So I realized that in my relationship, my wife, marriage growing up was yelling, arguing, making up infidelity, making up cheating, making up. That was her viewpoint of what marriage was. And that was not the same viewpoint that I had. So we had to come together and define for ourselves and make sure we had the same definition of what is marriage truly. And I think that once you are able to have that alignment on what you guys are both trying to go after, then that creates an environment to be able to achieve your goals and make that a lot easier.
That's so well said. I think we as people like to think of words like math. And in many ways, in many circumstances, they are A plus B equals C. Dre went to the store. Okay. That makes sense because I just watched him walk to the store. So when someone says Dre went to the store, it's an equation, A, B, C. But for a lot of words and a lot of phrases, it's much more like looking at a painting in a museum. You and I could look at the same painting, especially if it's an abstract work of art, and we could stare at that painting for 5 minutes each. And then a curator at the museum comes up to the two of us. They say, okay, Dre, what did you see? And they go to me, all right, Michael, what did you see? And we're going to say entirely different things because we interpreted the painting different ways, even though we're looking at the same image. And so I think to your point, if you're interpreting in that painting, the painting called marriage or the painting called relationships or the painting called love, an entirely different thing from what I'm interpreting, we can think, all right, we're both standing in the museum. We're both looking at this piece of art. We must be on the same page because we're both looking at the same thing without having those discussions of when you say you want someone to care for you. What does that mean? You know, because we talk about love languages. I'm married to an introvert, right? And she is an amazing human being in so many different ways and very social. But when I say introvert, I mean like in the classical sense, in the same way that I'm an extrovert and that I get energy from being around and talking with people. I don't know how many introverted podcasters there are, maybe quite a few, but I imagine extroverts outnumber them. And she, although she's incredibly social and gregarious and outgoing, social events can exhaust her, right? So for her to be cared for and for me to be cared for in that context can mean entirely different things, even though we both mean it. I just think what you said there is really profound, getting on the same page with someone else as to what they actually mean when they say they're looking for something.
And that's where a lot of relationships fall apart right there, is the communication. What are the expectations? That's where it all goes. And I think that that's the part after the movie that they never show us, right? That's after Cinderella got her slipper back and now is living with the prince. What happens after that? What is the expectations? What is she expecting? Because I'm sure Cinderella's view, given how she grew up on love and marriage, is a lot different than that prince who grew up in the castle and grew up in the kingdom. So now let's see, once they're together, how do they manage knowing that they have two separate views, or maybe not even knowing they have two separate views on what marriage looks like and what true relationship looks like? So the word that I like to use is just intentionality. That's the biggest thing when it comes to it, because it takes work, but you have to be intentional with the work that you're putting in order to achieve the best result. And I don't think that's honestly just reserved for relationships. That's reserved for anything that you want to be successful in, is that you have to have a certain level of intentionality when it comes to achieving whatever goal that you want to achieve.
Yes. On the topic of intentionality, which I completely agree with, you weren't always saving yourself for marriage. I think that you flipped that switch at 23. Do I have that age right?
Yes.
And you said in a video that you and Brie made in 2019, where you were explaining why you were waiting to have sex until marriage, quote, so that you can remain sober in your quest for the person you want to spend the rest of your life with, end quote. Is there a way through intentionality to remain sober in your decision making about a big life decision like that? Or do you think in the case of finding the person who you want to be married to, whether you want to keep that personal to your choice or as a more universal statement, do you think it's possible to exercise intentionality without waiting for marriage? Or do you think that's impossible, that to be truly intentional, you must be sober from that in order to make that choice?
I think that's a good question. I'll answer that by first saying this is a lot of times you'll meet certain experts or gurus who will tell you this is the way that you have to do something, and this is the only way that it can be done. I beg to differ. There are a lot of ways to reach a happy relationship. There's the path of least resistance. And then there's a path to where you'll be going over some speed bumps, you'll off-road a little bit, making some turns down some places you don't want to go, but you could still end up in the same location. For me, I always suggest that people do wait, just as a way, like I said, to remain sober, because we've seen that sex can intoxicate your mind and throw off your judgment. We could look back at history. Empires have fallen because men or women are focused on sex or lust and not focused on the things that actually matter. And not saying that that doesn't matter, but when it comes to long-term relationships, there's a lot more to that foundation of making that last than just having a great sexual relationship with somebody. So I always say sex is going to be there. I'm not encouraging people or telling people they have to wait for marriage. I do think waiting gives you the time to truly evaluate and be intentional without having that intoxication. But to be honest, our best friends who are married, they have a great relationship. They had sex the first night that they were together. But I think that at some point in their relationship, they had to get intentional and say, we are going to learn more about each other. We're going to have these hard conversations about what we both want for our future, what things we need to change in order to compromise to be with one another. So I do think you have to be intentional at some point in your relationship, but you don't have to wait for marriage or even wait to have sex at all, because I've seen it done different ways. But I think that I would caution people to take the approach of just rushing into physical relations with somebody and thinking that is the test for true compatibility for a lifelong partnership.
Earlier this year, I had on Washington Post columnist and author of the book, Rethinking Sex, A Provocation. Her name's Christine Emba. I think she'd be an amazing guest for Real Love Scenario. She's based in the Washington, D.C. area, so who knows? But her book, Rethinking Sex, isn't necessarily prescriptive of either waiting for marriage or what exactly you should do. But it delves deep into how dissatisfied so many young people are with sex today. There's this quote from our conversation where she says, quote, "And so I think that we have theoretically the most freedom to have sex on our own terms and pursue our own sexual pleasure than maybe we've ever had. Contraception is widely available. Most Americans now do not think there's anything morally wrong with extramarital or premarital sex. And yet, it seems like in this open field of free-willing sex, a lot of people feel lost. They have all this freedom, but it's not really making them happy. They're often finding themselves having sex that they don't want to have, doing things that they don't want to do, or feeling lonelier than ever before. And so there's this disconnect between what we felt we were being offered and what the experience actually is." End quote. That mimics a lot of the experiences that I've had with peers when they talk about, especially women, and a lot of her book is geared towards women, although it's a book that can be enjoyed and related to by both men and women, but many of the people she spoke with and many of the people who were the most dissatisfied with the sex they were having in the relationships that they had were women. And it's just interesting to explore that disconnect. And I think that there are many different ways to attack it. I think that you and your wife were able to find a path that worked for both of you. And I hear your point about it not being necessarily the right path for everyone to walk down. But I think that the binding glue, to your earlier point, Dre, needs to be intentionality. That is really Christine's point in her book, is that we don't have to return to an era of the 1950s or sexual norms of the 1950s. But I do think we have to be really intentional about having conversations around what we want, whether that is a relationship or just sex. What are each of us wanting to get out of this experience? And what does this mean to us?
I think that we just as a society have placed unfair weight on sex in a relationship. And the reason that I think that that is the case is because sex is really the only thing that is universally agreed upon that you cannot do with somebody else if you're in a exclusive relationship. And that's the physical act of having sex with a different person. So now we put this weight on sex because we know that, all right, if we're committing to this person, this is really the only thing that we cannot do with anybody else for the rest of our lives, essentially. When it comes to other forms of cheating, like people say emotional cheating, a lot of people mostly cheat with their moms or with their sisters or with their friends. They may be not emotionally available to their partner, but then they'll call their mom. And sometimes for a lot of relationships, that's not frowned upon. It's like, oh, she's just talking to her mom. That's not cheating. Oh, she's just talking to her sister. That's not cheating. Oh, he's just talking to his brother. That's not cheating. But they're not being emotionally available to you in the relationship. They're connecting emotionally with somebody else to meet those needs. But physical sex, I think, is the only thing that, like I said, universally, we all are just like, you can't do that with anybody else. So therefore, there's all this pressure and weight put on sexual experiences that is the most important thing. That's the thing that you're giving up. And that should be one of the foundational pieces of your relationship. But what I've experienced, once you get in a relationship and once you get married, I mean, even if I'm pretty sure you could do the math that even if you have sex one time every day for an hour, it's probably less than 10% of your life, if you do that for the rest of your life, that you're actually having sex with somebody. And we all know, ain't nobody's having sex every day for an hour. Like, that's not a realistic thing. But that just shows you that it's probably even a lower percentage of your life of when you're actually going to be having sex with somebody, especially somebody who you're going to see as a long-term partner. But I think it's also, especially for women, I know sometimes from a society standpoint, it's been viewed in a lot of different ways and not viewed as an intimate act between two people who love each other. Sometimes it's used as currency. It's like, I give you this and then you give me this, or some type of exchange or some type of transaction. And then I can see why, if you're looking at sex in that way, that it's a transactional thing, that it may not seem as great as you thought it would be, or it doesn't seem as dreamy or fantastic as you thought sex may be. So I definitely would love to talk to her, because I think that that's an interesting perspective and something that people could definitely learn from.
And to Bree's point in that same 2019 video, similarly to what you said, Dre, about how you don't need to have a partner who cooks, you can learn how to cook. If you're operating from a place of love and intentionality and commitment, you can just get better at having sex with the person you love. Like, it's not like your height, although I suppose people can alter their heights now with limb lengthening, but it's not like something that's immutable where it's like, I guess I was born with brown eyes. There's just nothing I can do. I don't mean to make it sound too clinical, but at the end of the day, it is a skill you can learn. And if you love the person and if you want to be with them for the rest of your life and you want to please them and make them feel loved and safe, etc., you can just listen to them and improve. This is my own bias talking, but I think when people will say, what if you wait and the sex is bad? It's like, okay, well, what if the first meal you ever cook is bad? Like, does that mean you're just going to cook bad food for the rest of your life? No, you're going to try that pot roast again the next night and it's going to suck a little less. And then a couple months from now, you're going to try that pot roast again and it's going to be the most delicious thing you ever had because you've been cooking pot roast every night. It's interesting all the kinds of baggage we carry around this topic when, if we really were to just to think about it like other aspects of life, we could see that there's ways to improve it. There's ways that it doesn't have to dominate our every single day and every single thought. It's just interesting to me how we hold out certain topics, whether it's sex or anything else, as if they're so separate from the human experience that we can't apply the same lessons we've learned elsewhere to that.
All that you said, I would say, is one of the biggest reasons that relationships fail and why people walk away from relationships, from my experience and listening to so many different people, is that people walk away from relationships because people don't inherently naturally know how to do something, but they don't want to communicate it to them. They just want somebody to know how to do it. And people will walk away from people just because they don't know how to do something that they never communicated. And it's like the craziest thing to me. And that's why we go back to relationships take work. You have to communicate. We have grown up in this society to where everything's so dreamy, like we talked about, the movies, the stories that end with marriage, and that everything goes according to plan and that people know how to do things if they're a great person to be in a relationship with. But there are things that you have to teach a person, or you have to communicate to them, because they don't know how to do it, or they never had to do it, or they never saw somebody do it before. I know things my wife had to bring up to me going into a room. We're talking to all these different people. Hey, babe, you didn't introduce me to anybody. That doesn't make me a bad person, or because I didn't naturally do that, she just throws me completely away because that's something that she wants to be done. She has to communicate those things. And I think that's the same with sex, is that people sometimes just want people to be great at it. What's great for you may be great for somebody else. There's different people that have different sexual things that they like. So they could enter into a relationship with somebody who like having sex a certain type of way. And then when they come to you, they do that same thing, but you don't like it. It doesn't necessarily mean that they don't know what they're doing or that they're wrong. They just have to cater that to you. But how would they know unless you tell them? You have to communicate to the people that you're with your needs, how you like things, because we're all separate people coming together to have a partnership with another person. So we have to communicate what things that we will like. And that's one of the main reasons I see relationships fall apart, is because it goes back to the same words, the expectations that people have of their partner, and then not communicating their expectations to their partner when they go into dating and relationships and things like that.
I think it all boils down to being able to adapt and change our perception of ourselves. If we perceive ourselves as, I'm someone who I get up every morning at 5, or I'm someone who, whatever it is, right? You start defining yourself by things that you do and don't do. And then you define yourself by those things for so long that they feel like they're immutable. You're like, that's just who I am. I can't change. That would be like changing a fundamental part of me. But if we leave ourselves open to adapt and change and continue to grow until the day that we die, especially when you find someone who you want to spend the rest of your life with. I mean, everyone in my family, including myself, is allergic to shedding dogs. So I grew up with a miniature schnauzer who doesn't shed. And then when I got my own dog 5 years ago, I got a miniature poodle mix, an adorable dog named Charlie, who is in the room with me right now. And I told myself, I'm never going to be with someone who has a shedding dog, because why would I put myself through that? I've carved my life around non-shedding dogs because I'm allergic to them. And now I'm married to a woman with 3 shedding dogs, and I take Claritin every day. But if I had stuck to that idea of myself, I would have passed up the woman who is perfect for me. I would have passed up my wife, and that would have been really stupid. And that is a lighthearted example of, I think, a very real thing, which is that, to your point, Dre, it's if you open yourself up to realizing that your ways of being and your opinions and the way that you do things are not static, and that you don't betray yourself by changing, you just make the world so much larger for yourself. One of the reasons that you started the podcasts was that so you could open yourself up to listening to other people's experiences and opinions. And even if you weren't going to internalize all those opinions yourself, exposing yourself to other people's experiences would honestly help you grow as a person and learn more about the world and other ways of being and living and having a relationship. So after hosting and after starting Relationship Restored several years ago, consolidating all those different conversations you've had, all those different people from different backgrounds and different experiences that you've interviewed and spoken with, what are some of the top line things about relationships that you've noticed across all those experiences really work consistently, no matter who you are, and some things that really, no matter who you are, you should try to avoid?
If you would have asked me this a few years ago, I would have gave you a lot of different answers than what I'll probably give you now. But
well, because you've grown.
Yeah, for sure. And the ability to be able to listen and interact with so many couples has given me a lot of perspective. So the first thing I would say, and like I said, this would be different, and you might not hear this with a lot of other people who talk about relationships, but one thing I noticed, this isn't the key to relationships lasting for a long time, but it's the number one thing that I feel like has to be there, is every single person that I've met who is married and happy, and I don't know, maybe you'll tell me this doesn't apply to you, feels like their partner is one of the funniest people in the world. And I meet people whose husband or wives are introverts, and they're like, you just don't know them. You're not around them enough. Like, they are hilarious. And that's one thing that I've seen, is that you have to enjoy and have fun and laugh with your person, because a lot of relationships is who we're choosing to go through hard stuff with. But at the end of it, it should all be a net positive. And if you can't enjoy your time with your person and laugh and have fun, then what are we doing here? Like, I meet so many people who are sticking with people, and I'm like, are you happy? Do you enjoy spending time with them? And they're like, no. Well, why are you still in this relationship? Even the healthiest relationships go through hard times. But if you're not even getting the positive, the fun, the laughing, the joking, why are you even with this person? And we're talking about especially pre-marriage sometimes too. It's like, man, you guys are only 2 years in and you're talking about how you can't stand to be around this person, but you're just sticking it out, hoping for something to change. That's not a good sign. So that's the first thing I'll say, is that most relationships that I've seen that are truly happy and healthy, they laugh with each other so much. And a lot of them feel like their partner is just the funniest person in the world. Even if outside people don't think that they're funny, they just find a way to laugh with them and their partner cracks them up. So I would say that that's one thing that's probably a little different that I've noticed with a lot of couples. The other thing is that communication is one of the main issues why a lot of relationships fail too. But I think that a lot of couples and people just in general don't have an understanding of what healthy communication is in a relationship. And healthy communication isn't open communication. It isn't honest communication. It isn't transparent communication. Good communication in a relationship is effective communication. And the way that your communication is effective is if the person receives what you're actually saying. If they don't receive it, it wasn't effective. So therefore, it wasn't good communication. And when I talk to people, I say, I don't want to know your partner's favorite color or their favorite food. I want to know if you have to deliver something critical to your partner, how do you do that? That lets me know that you know your person. If you're able to communicate something critical to them effectively and you know how to do it, do you wait? I know my wife, she loves food. So sometimes if we do dinner, I sit her down, she has a meal, and then we could talk about things because she's in a better mood because she loves her food. I know what to get her. And she likes that. She enjoys that. She'd rather have conversations that are tough or critical in that way versus being in the heat of the moment. Because a lot of times we just want to get something off just to say that we were right, or we just want to be super open and honest and just say, I told you so. And even if you're right, if it's not in the right timing, the person is not going to receive what you said. So you didn't communicate that well. They're just going to hear it and go straight to a defense. So that's another thing. If you want to have good communication, you have to understand that good communication is effective communication. And in order to communicate effectively, you have to learn your person and learn what ways they receive criticism, learn when to talk to them and what environments are best to talk to them in order to communicate what you want to communicate to them. So those are the two main things. I have my few sayings that I always say that a relationship is not two halves coming together, it's two wholes growing together. So making sure that you're not coming incomplete and asking somebody to complete you and having a whole bunch of holes, because when you do have holes and you go into a relationship and you're looking for somebody to fill those holes, then now you become dependent. So if you have to leave a situation that's unhealthy for you, you're hesitant to leave because you feel like without them, then you're incomplete and these holes can't be filled. So if you're relying on somebody to make you feel beautiful, if you're relying on somebody to hold you up completely financially initially when you come into the relationship, you're going to be completely dependent on that person. So even if things are unhealthy, it'll be very hard for you to walk away, because the only reason that you feel like you're complete is because of them. So making sure that as an individual, of course, we'll always have things that we're dealing with, but making sure you try to come to a relationship as whole as you possibly can before entering into a relationship with somebody else. And the last part of that is growing together, is that you want to make sure that you can find somebody that you can grow with, not just being with somebody in the present, but finding somebody who you can, you know, have a lasting relationship with. And that starts with asking the right questions when you're in that initial phase of what somebody wants to be, where somebody wants to go, what they want to achieve. And I guess I'll just end with the most important part of that is just love. And love is a true commitment to somebody. And I always say that love is not just because of, it's in spite of. It's easy to love somebody because they're cute, because they buy you things, because they give you massages, and because the sex is good. But will you love me in spite of my three dogs that shit? Would you love me in spite of any weight gain I may have? Will you love me in spite of the different traumas that I dealt with when I was younger? Like, are you still going to be here when times get rough? And when times get tough, because that's when the true love and commitment shows up in a relationship. And that's ultimately what leads to relationships lasting, from everything that I've seen and all the different people I talk to, is there's a love there and there's an unselfishness there. Selfishness, a lot of times, is the destruction of a lot of relationships. They are only focused on themselves and that's it, and have no consideration for the other person. But those people who are unselfish in relationships and are continually focusing on the other person and are committed to their love that they have in that relationship, those are the ones that I typically see succeed. But that takes work. And you have to be willing to put in the work if you want your relationship to succeed.
The internet is filled with people giving advice, and most of that advice is bad because it's rooted in ego or a desire to appear, you know, like a perfect expert in something. So much confidence, so little humility. I think that good advice has to start from a place of humility, of acknowledging what we didn't know when we started and acknowledging what we still yet don't know. And one of the things that I love about your podcast, Dre, is they all come from a place of vulnerability and honesty and authenticity. So thank you for the time that you've spent with us. And I'm really glad we met at that convention.
No, I really appreciate it. I'm glad that we had the opportunity to talk. And this is something that I just love to do. And the thing that I love the most is just hearing your perspective and hearing you talk about your relationship, the things that you and your wife went through and what you dealt with. For me, that's what it's all about. I feel like that's the best way to learn, because one thing about relationships is that it's been around since the beginning of time, since we were here, however long ago, depending on what you believe. But we still haven't figured it out yet. We still haven't gotten it down to an exact science. So that's why I always say, too, is like, hey, I'm not giving advice. I'm just sharing my perspective. That's all. Just sharing the perspective of things that I dealt with. And I love hearing people share their perspective, because I learned so much from that. And from you even sharing with me, I can share that with other people. And we can just continue to keep growing and growing and growing and trying to be the best that we possibly can be, because that's all we can do.
I could not have said it better. And thank you again for your time today, Dre.
Appreciate it.
Hey there. If you're hearing this, you're exactly the person this message is for. If you're a fan of the show, please consider giving it a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or sharing one of your favorite episodes with a friend or family member, or a coworker, or that barista down the street who always knows your drink order, because those two small actions have outsized impact and will help the show increase its listenership, expand its reach, and continue to attract engaging guests to talk about fascinating topics. But it needs to be said, you just being a listener is already a big deal. So thank you.